since the agenda was posted and somebody makes a proper motion to go into executive session to discuss land acquisition, then you could, you do it, you don't have to amend it where you get it on there.
Good morning. We'll begin the October 3rd, 2006, Essex County Council meeting with the Lord's Prayer followed by the pledge of allegiance to the flag. Our Father, which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. Lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Thine is the kingdom, the power, the glory forever. Amen. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I don't have an agenda. Do you have an agenda?
Yes.
First, anything changed?
Is it Baywood?
And then the next Delaware Association of Counties is Baywood, the next week, so both of them are Baywood.
Okay, that's cool. I understand. Approval of the agenda that you have before you, gentlemen. Let the record show that Mr. Dukes will not be today. He's out of town on personal business. And with that, gentlemen, approval of the agenda. Mr. Chickles, any corrections?
I would ask if it's possible to either duplicate the any additional business at about 10:45. There's an issue that I was hoping Denrek could be here to hear about. Okay. And if you guys, you know, can you be here at 10:45, or are you on a tight schedule this morning?
Okay.
Well, if we can move it up, we'll move it up.
Okay. Yeah, no problem. Right.
They're on our nickel.
We'll have an additional business, I guess, and move it up to 10:45. That'll be right after Mr. Godwin, I guess.
So move, Mr. President.
Motion, Mr. Jones, second, Mr. Phillips, to approve the agenda for October 3rd, 2006, as in printed form, with the addition of an additional business at 10:45. Questions? Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Jones?
Yes.
Everybody is yes. Approval minutes from September the 12th, 2006, as in printed form that you had before you.
So move.
Second.
Motion by Mr. Jones, second by Mr. Phillips, to approve the minutes for September 12th, 2006, for Essex County Council as in printed form. Questions? Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Jones?
Yes.
Everybody is yes. Reading of correspondence, Mr. Griffin.
We have four items this morning. First, a letter from the director of the Roxana Cheer Center, Jacqueline Walters, thanking council for providing funding that has made it possible for them to continue transporting senior citizens. A similar letter from the Harbor Lights Cheer Center in Lewis, thanking council for funding the transportation program. A letter from Easter Seals thanking council for registering to attend the Easter Seals annual dinner and explaining their program and what they do with the money they obtain from the proceeds of the dinner. A letter from First State Community Action Director Bernice Edwards thanking council for making a contribution that makes it possible for them to assist the low-income communities of Pinetown, Cool Spring, and the Lucas development. That's all the correspondence, unless some of you have some additional items to pass down.
Okay. With that, we'll move on to Delaware Natural Resources with the Inland Bays Pollution Control Strategies. Someone want to lead off? Introduce yourself and your agencies and why you're here.
Thank you, Mr. President. My name is Kevin Donnelly. I'm the Director of Water Resources for the Department of Natural Resources and Environmental Control. Thank you for the opportunity to present to Council a brief presentation on our proposed Inland Bays Pollution Control Strategy Regulation. This is the fifth public presentation of this proposed regulation that we've made since early August. And in deference to your time and the time allotted for the presentation, I'd like to introduce Kathy Bunting Howarth, who will make the presentation to council this morning. Thank you.
Thank you for the invitation to come before you to share our latest draft of the Inland Bays Pollution Control Strategy. I think we'll be up and running in a minute. I'm going to go through basically a brief history of how we got to where we are today and review just the latest revisions to the strategy. The entire thing can be found on our website. One of the hot links is to the Inland Bays Pollution Control Strategy. I'm going to go ahead and start speaking, even though the visuals aren't up yet. Oh, here they come. Just a reminder, elected officials, appointed officials have been concerned with the Inland Bays for quite a while now. We've had various task force and different programs looking at the health of the Inland Bays. What got us to this point was actually a lawsuit that was initiated in 1997. Which required the state to come up with total maximum daily loads or pollutant budgets for the Inland Bays to be completed soon as possible. So we did create these TMDLs in 1998 for the Indian River Bay, and Rehoboth Bay, and in 2004 for the Little Afternoon Bay. In 1998, the Inland Bays Tributary Action Team was formed by the Center for the Inland Bays in order to come up with an implementation approach for implementing their comprehensive conservation and management plan. At the same time, DENREC had started a TMDL advisory committee to help with implementation of the TMDL. Those two efforts joined. The TRIB team had conducted public outreach. There were seven public forums in which we brought the issues out to the public and distributed issue books, got a feeling, try to get from the community what they'd be willing to do in order to clean up the Inland Bays. This team sent several recommendations to the department. They had recommendations addressed wastewater development and stormwater, but it was silent on agriculture. So we did spend a couple of years meeting with the agriculture community because we wanted to be able to identify how much they had done from the baseline of the TMDL, which was 1990, up into the present, to reduce nutrients. At the same time, we also wanted to be able to have implementation goals for various best management practices in the strategy for the agricultural community. So we were successful in that part. In December of 2004, we had a meeting with elected officials and said, came forward with our first public, full-blown pollution control strategy for the Inland Bays. We had three different workshops in January and February of 2005. Between March and May of 2005, we briefed several additional organizations and made changes to that strategy based on comments we had received. And we had a second version go out for three public workshops in May of 2005. At the same time, we were asked to go to the House Natural Resource Committee and brief them on the strategy as well. In June, there was a Senate concurrent resolution that was drafted that did not pass both houses of government. However, our cabinet secretary did commit to meeting with groups that called themselves the coalition to further discuss their concerns with the strategy, and that's what we've done for about the last 14 months. And that's the basis of the strategy remains the TRIB team recommendations along with the input from the agricultural as well as development communities. Just to remind you, the Inland Bays TMDL is probably the most stringent TMDL in the state. It calls for the systematic elimination of all point sources as well as large reductions in non-point sources of nitrogen and phosphorus. You've seen these pictures before. The nutrients are associated with algae. The algae dies off. We have drops in dissolved oxygen. It leaves the fish kill. It's horrible for juvenile crabs. It's just a bad situation. We've had to put up signs to warn against swimming because of harmful algal blooms and such associated with these symptoms. So, of course, we need a pollution control strategy in order to get rid of these signs and clean up our bays. I show this slide to remind people that although we're talking about the systematic elimination of all point sources, for the inland bays at whole, we're looking at a non-point source pollution problem. As you can see, the graph on your left is for nitrogen, on your right is for phosphorus. The green solid area represents the non-point source contributions, which is 78% for the nitrogen load and 69% for the phosphorus load. In terms of our pollution control strategy, we do have a set of agricultural BMP goals. It addresses nutrient management plans, manure relocation, buffers, wetland restoration, cover crops, and water control structures. And we're grateful for our partners in the agricultural community who have begun implementing these practices. We anticipate by, January 1, 2007, we'll have all of our agricultural acres and nutrient management plans. As of 2005, we believe the commission has come extremely close to relocating all of the excess manure in the inland bays. We believe if they keep up the rate they're doing now, we only have an additional 500 plus tons to relocate. We have a long way to go in terms of achieving our grass and forested buffer goals, as well as our wetland restoration efforts. But we hope with our partnerships, especially with the district, that we can reach these goals sooner rather than later. The wastewater component, and when I say wastewater, I mean the component that addresses on-site systems, remains substantially equivalent to the earlier drafts. There's still going to be performance standards for all size systems, small individual systems, or large community systems that impact the amount of nitrogen that these systems can release. In addition, we're proposing to start a compliance and inspection program. There is an inspection at sale component, but we believe this will actually only impact people for the first 3 years that we implement the program, as all you need to do is show that you've had an inspection within the last 3 years for the department. What the buyers and sellers need to do with mortgage companies is their business, but for the department's purpose, we can use one of those triannual inspection programs for our regulations.
You're talking about individual septic systems on that one?
That's correct.
Okay.
And that's at the sale of the home?
Sale of the home. You need to show that you've had pumped out and inspected.
Right now. That's what the
it will be upon promulgation of the regulation. However, since this is an actual compliance inspection program, if you have a standard gravity system, you're going to need to have that pump out and inspected once every 3 years. And the regulation is written and proposed such that you can use that annual 3-year inspection for the purposes of this regulation. So it should only impact people the first 3 years of the compliance inspection program, depending on whether or not they've had that
first
inspection.
You have to have records,
though,
if you sell your home, that you did it every 3 years?
Yep. The records should be kept by the department, by the homeowner, and by the pumper. In addition, for lots created after the promulgation of this strategy, drain fields for on-site systems will not be allowed within 100 feet of a tidal water, a tidal wetland, a perennial stream or ditch, or ponds in line with those perennial water courses. We like to emphasize at this point that we're concerned about the economic impacts of these recommendations on people of low or fixed income that might not be used to having an inspection and pump out fee every 3 years, or having to update their system with this compliant with enhanced technology. We do know that there are some limited grants funds available and loans for people who qualify, but we have a feeling that there might be a greater need identified.
In other words, you're trying to set up a program that will, in your system, that will allow them to do this.
We're exploring the options. We're raising this as a red flag. We know this is going to be a concern to some people. Point sources. In our talks over the last 14 months, we had an opportunity to meet with lots of scientists at the university. And at this point, we're here to stress the importance of the actual systematic elimination of the point sources. I know earlier I made the point it's a non-point source problem, and that is true for the inland bays as a whole. However, the systematic elimination of these point sources is important on a local for local water quality as well. For instance, the Rehoboth Wastewater Treatment Plant, Phosphorus, and the Rehoboth Bay. This graph represents the average annual load of phosphorus to the Rehoboth Bay, just the Rehoboth Bay. 52% of that comes from Rehoboth wastewater discharge. On an average summer, 64% of it comes from the Rehoboth discharge. And for a dry year, you're looking at about 85% of the phosphorus to the Rehoboth Bay only coming from that point source. So as you can see, the systematic elimination part of the TMDL is extremely important for local water quality concerns. That's why we also need to ensure that Millsboro is systematically eliminated as well, and that Lewis has an effective program to effectively trade away the portion of their discharge that goes to the Rehoboth Bay as well.
What's the plan to get the Rehoboth effluent out of the bay?
Rehoboth is working with their consultant engineers. There is a consent decree. Following the consent decree, they have up to 2014, and they're looking at, you know, multiple scenarios.
They have until when, 2014?
Yes.
Well, haven't you given them extensions already through the years? Get within compliance, or maybe
I can't answer that question. No. I'm not aware of any.
Okay.
Why, if they contribute so much, is there a delay in addressing that?
They actually had a huge upgrade to their system. I believe it was in the early 90s, right before the promulgation of the TMDL. So they had already made a huge reduction in their load. So they had made an initial investment.
Is that an excuse not to address it today?
It's being addressed. A judge has signed off on an order. There's a plan in place for coming up with the method of that systematic elimination. There's a timetable for them to trade away the loads that they're not eliminating, before 2014. So there are things
trade away.
Place.
So they may not actually stop doing what they're doing. They may
They have the option of doing that in the consent decree, but I don't think they're going to be trading away their entire discharge. The trading is in there primarily, I believe, in order to address interim measures between now and 2014. There's a nutrient budget protocol that was put together. It's basically an Excel spreadsheet that lets you look at a piece of land and see what development is going to do to the nitrogen and phosphorus load from that land. Compare a tract of forest to a subdivision with 1-acre lots. The first and second versions had this as a required step. It's now going to be a voluntary step. The DENREC is going to be doing analyses of projects that go through the preliminary land use service process in-house, and we'll have that information available for local governments or developers or the public.
And what's that going to do?
It's going to give us an idea of a way. It's kind of a predictive tool to figure out, okay, are we – in the grand scheme of things, as land use is changing, are we getting the reductions we need, or we think we're going to see the reductions we need? Because you need to remember we have that groundwater lag time. And so as we estimate whether or not we're achieving the reductions we need, just because we put the BMP on the ground today doesn't mean that tomorrow we're going to see the water quality. We realize it
right,
might be 10, 15
usually voluntary
years.
Programs
right.
Aren't real effective.
Well, it depends on the voluntary program. Some have been. But this is looking at changes in landscape. If you have an ag field with a nutrient management plan and buffers, and you put in a development with 30% open space and so many lots with so much impervious cover, and their wastewater goes to South Coastal, and they use 5 different types of stormwater management practices, what's the pre and post picture in terms of nutrient reduction. The stormwater section was significantly enhanced and clarified. It allowed, it presented a lot more predictability as well as flexibility. It went from saying you have to show that your sediment and stormwater plan achieves the TMDL nutrient reductions or uses best available technology to something that actually looks at 5 different methods. If you do any of these 5 things, you achieve the pollution control strategy for your stormwater design. two of which are based on your design of your the landscape. You utilize a 100-foot buffer, or you preserve at least 30% of your existing forest and buffer intermittent streams, which are streams that only flow part of the year. Or you can choose to use a spreadsheet similar to the one I described earlier that looks just at the developed condition pre and post use of stormwater BMPs. And you show that you either achieve the TMDL reductions in terms of nitrogen and phosphorus, or that you achieve irreducible concentrations in terms of your effluent coming out of the stormwater system. You can't put another practice on and actually reduce that nitrogen or phosphorus even more. It's kind of, you know, that diminishing returns idea. Or you're using three stormwater practices in a row, treating the stormwater in series throughout the entire site. Buffers. The pollution control strategy now calls for a 50-foot buffer. It requires a buffer on tidal waters, tidal wetlands, perennial streams and perennial ditches, and ponds in line with these perennial streams and ditches. You may be thinking this looks very familiar. How it differs from your ordinance is that it picks up perennial ditches. In addition, it will apply to the municipalities, most of which I believe do not have a buffer ordinance of 50 feet.
Do you all distinguish between a tax ditch that was originally a stream that they, you know, what do you call it? Do you call it a tax ditch or do you call it a stream?
There, we have people in our wetlands and sublaqueous land sections that have history and experience, like looking at a stream and looking at aerial photography from the past and to tell if it's a channelized stream or a ditch.
Yeah, a lot of times these,
this will pick up any water body, whether it's a stream or a ditch, as long as it has water in it year-round.
Okay. And it includes a tax ditch?
It includes a tax ditch. However, address the tax ditch organizations and the easements and the vegetation requirements are relaxed such that there shouldn't be an issue with access rights and such.
Only when it's developed is when this stuff is.
That's correct. We think we're going to get some significant reductions from nitrogen in that in the inland bays. Watershed, we have over 1,000 miles of streams. 60% of them are ditches. 90% of the ditches don't have a wooded buffer. So although those ditches are for perennial and intermittent ditches, we think we're still going to get some improvement.
I guess one of the problems I have with including ditches is that they are by design created to draw water toward them. And had they not been artificially created, they're certainly a lot of cases would not be a perennial nature to them.
Well, there's concern that maybe not enough ditches are going to be picked up because we're only going for the ditches that have water year-round.
I think there's a major concern among rural property owners that that is an overreach on the protocol's part.
Okay. The buffer section has vegetation recommendations in the technical document. There's a huge appendix that represents, that identifies native species as well as one that identifies the list of invasive no-no species for planting. The buffer ordinance will, regulation would allow for stormwater features to be located in the buffer if the buffer is on community property and it can't be within 25 feet of the water body or wetland. It allows for impervious paths within portions of the buffer. However, if that path extends greater than 5% of the area, it has to be mitigated on a one-to-one basis. In addition, the buffer may be on private property.
You said part of 50 feet, you can't be 25 feet within.
If you want to put a stormwater feature in your buffer.
Oh, okay.
It has to be within the upland 25 feet of it, not 25 feet to the water. For the buffer, there's no lot lines permitted within wetlands for developments of 3/4 acre lots or less. The buffers themselves need to be delineated on site plans. They need to be identified with markers. And there's going to be specific language required in deed restrictions in order to protect the water quality functions of the buffer.
Now, we're only talking about tidal wetlands, or are we talking about all wetlands?
The no-knot lines permitted within all wetlands.
Okay.
And who is going to enforce that, that buffer restriction?
Enriquay.
If somebody comes in, does it 5 years later, are you going to check it every year? You guys doing that? Or?
We're going to work on it.
Okay.
This graph represents different studies and literature reviews that were done regarding buffers, buffer width, and nutrients, only nutrients removal. Each bar represents the minimum width that author felt a buffer needed to be to reduce nutrients. The range goes from anywhere from 13 to 300 feet. So there is a lot of variability in the scientific data out there. This is just a cartoon that illustrates where the buffer would be, where the magenta line is represents the buffer area. So you can see the buffers on the tidal water, the tidal wetlands, the perennial streams, the perennial ditches, and the ponds. Now, in our strategy, we like to take credit for all the good work that's been done to date. And so we have estimated the progress that's been made towards achieving those nutrient reductions based on the 1990 baseline. So we looked at all the great things that have been done since 1990, including the implementation of agricultural best management practices, the over 13 septic systems that have gone to sewer, due in large part to a lot of work of this council, as well as the implementation of the sediment stormwater law. And we believe we're about 32% of the way there for nitrogen and 82% of the way there for phosphorus. And if we implement this strategy, we believe we will achieve the TMDL. The effective date would be 180 days for the wastewater section. The stormwater section would be upon promulgation in the county and within 1 year of the promulgation date in the towns. And the trigger is going to be the submission of a subdivision plan, site plan, or request for a TIS to DLDOT. The reason for the difference between the counties and the towns is that we believe there's going to be less impact on design and yield in the counties versus in the municipal areas. And as Kevin said, we've done, had a lot of presentations, and we're collecting comments. I did ask for them by last Friday. I have extended it through this week given this meeting today. So if you have any comments, please get them to me as soon as possible.
Thank you.
Okay.
It was asked of me where DENREC, or when DENREC got the authority from the General Assembly to implement this program.
It's the authorities in Chapter 60. And I don't know when that law was passed.
So with respect, with respect to the specifics of this, there's really no General Assembly oversight or authority.
Other than secretary, probably.
Other than some Chapter 60 that was passed a long time ago.
The same authority that we have to promulgate the TMDLs is what we're using to do the pollution control strategy.
The devil is in the details often when you start defining certain elements. It could create a scenario different than maybe what is presented. For instance, perennial ditches. Has that been well defined at this point, or is that something that comes later?
We do not have, I don't have a map back at the shop that I can scroll out and show you exactly where all the perennial ditches and perennial streams are. We do have maps that we can use as guidance, and a lot of that may have to be field verified.
And the field verification will be based on a current definition or one that'll be?
There's a definition in the regulations. It refers to, you know, continuous flow and under average conditions.
Is that going to be part of this document?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Do you have that definition now?
I can pull it up on the computer if you'd like to see it.
I think it'd be important to include, because I think that component from a property owner's perspective could be the one that is going to affect a lot of property owners. When you looked at your map, your little diagram up there, the buffers themselves sometimes on the streams and the wetlands did not have that much of a total effect, but that one little field that had a few ditches in it, in essence, became totally unusable because of the extension of those buffers.
Unusable to who?
In either direction.
To farmers?
Well, if it's got
unusable to who?
If it's got AR1 zoning, I guess the R component could become.
To the developers who would be buying the farms, you're.
To anybody who owns that property.
Well, right, all right, but right now we're speaking of basically the agriculture community, which is the farmers who were tilling the land.
No, we're talking about anybody that owns land.
The result will be developed.
Is this just for farmers or is this for everybody?
I think I heard it's not.
I think farmers, the buffer would be relaxed, but is that correct?
Farmers are not required to have a buffer.
Right.
It's only, it would only be, the buffer is only required for new developments.
So if you've got strictly agricultural zoned property, what does that mean?
Excuse me?
You have strictly agricultural property, for instance, if the Farmland Preservation Foundation had purchased your development rights, more than likely this would not have an effect. But if you currently have AR1 land, agriculture slash residential, this could have a huge impact?
You know, I've seen GIS analysis done recently by some people at the Center for the Inland Bays, which makes it seem that the perennial ditches is not as not as much of the impact as if you had all ditches. And so
I'd
in some cases.
I'd love to see that map. Yeah, that would be good to include in
your presentation. I think there's a gentleman in the back of the room that can then help you out. But yeah, perennial stream, pond, or ditch means a stream, portion of a stream, ditch, or a pond in line with a perennial stream that flows continuously during periods of average rainfall as a result of groundwater discharge or surface runoff.
How about when a farmer has tiled a field and is, in essence, artificially bringing water to those ditches? How is that affected by that definition?
Yeah.
Can affect the farmer is not going to be affected at all. It's only when the developers buy it. So you seem to be more worried about the developers or the farmers. Who are you worried about? The developers will work around all this stuff. They've done it. They've been doing it. So the farmers, somebody say it again, are not going to be affected too much by the buffers and a lot of these regulations, right?
Okay, Mr.
It's
Cole.
It's only
so
when once
changes,
the farmer
changes
sells
use.
The land.
Right.
Your rhetoric is been heard before. I'm trying to get some clear answers from the expert. My
it sounds
question
like you're
is,
worried about the farmer.
My question is, when there is an artificial system of drainage into these ditches, is that considered in the definition of a perennial ditch?
I am not. You call me an expert. I am not an expert on classification of streams and whether it's perennial and if our office has any history or practice with changing a definition based on tiling and that type of thing.
Right.
So it's something I can go back and talk to that section and get back to you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Mr. Cole is trying to make this discussion seem like it's all about protecting the developer.
That's
I'm simply trying to protect the zoning classification of property and
sure.
whether a farmer wants to farm it for the next 200 years and his children or whether that farmer is ready to retire and sell it for its highest and best use. I think it's important that we respect the zoning classification and the uses that can be made on that land. And that's what my questioning is about.
I do not foresee this impacting a farmer in that way.
In protecting his zoning classification?
When he develops it, it'll affect him.
He's worried about the developer. That's what he's trying to say.
Just in closing.
You can't just blow that
he's
off.
He's worried about the use, the value of the land.
The equity of the land.
Thank you.
It's a smoke screen.
One
but
final
we
question.
We understand.
I've heard the answer a number of times. I understand it. But for the constituents out there, the only calls I've been getting are, how does it affect me with my septic system? And you mentioned that a three-year inspection by the guy that pumps out their system. And what would that cost be to that constituent per
we're estimating about $500
every three years. They're
going
to have $500 added besides their pump out fee. That's going to be a Denrac requirement.
$500 a year?
No, every 3 years.
Every 3 years.
Every 3 years.
Includes a pump out, right?
No, it doesn't.
No.
The pump out is going to be on top of that.
So you have about $800 a year.
Right now, you know, we just got the Class H license, which is the inspector's license, up and running, and they're just doing it now at property transfers for mortgage companies and that type of thing. And so we expect to see some fluctuation in that price, but that's what we're estimating right now is $500 for an inspection.
Now, and through your records in your office, when it's done the first time, your Class H people come out, will they get a notice every 3 years? Because some of our older people, residential rural, will not remember it, and then will they be violated if you go over a date?
That's a great question. I'm going to look to Dave. I don't see him. Are we sending out notices every 3 years?
Yeah.
Okay.
We
like
all at one time.
An inspection reminder then.
Right.
Okay.
There will be reminders. But what they might be more concerned about is that within 20 years, the goal is to have all standard systems retrofitted to one of these advanced nutrient nitrogen removal systems. Which are going to
is
be
that
five.
Only in the inland bay, or is that all in?
Only for the inland bays.
Only for the inland bays.
That's what we're talking
and
about. Inland bays regulation. It may go to the Nanticoke as well. There are some areas of the state where it probably will not go.
Right.
But at this point.
If you do this, then it'll be the Nanticoke. I know you're doing a study on the Nanticoke, and you're just. The spinoff will be, it will go everywhere, basically.
And the idea behind having the 20-year time frame, because it's been criticized as being too long, is that we want to make sure if you install a system tomorrow, you have, you know, the light, you use a system for, you use what you pay for.
If we do this, and I know technology changed, you know, we do this, and I know the mound system was supposed to be the win-all of everything in Nonukan kind, and it really hasn't worked. Some of the systems that have been approved have not really panned out, and it's been a nightmare for the homeowner. You know, now all of a sudden we're doing another thing. You know, is there? I know there was a grant or programs. Again, the funding part is a huge thing, especially for some people in the county that are full-time residents and they're all like live in retirement and those kind of things that. Have a little place somewhere near the bay, and you know they got a septic tank or a holding tank, and they're going to be, and all of a sudden they get all this gets put in, and it doesn't work. You know, because the track record's not great sometimes.
Yeah, come on, Mike.
Well, they're doing their best they can where people have marginal lands to be able to get them to be able to live on that land.
Yeah, again,
so
Kevin,
I mean, the mound, right, Councilman Cole, the mound system was designed to provide for development on very wet sites.
Right.
Okay, and you create an artificial layer of soil upon which the wastewater is discharged. And, you know, some would say, not me, but some would say those sites shouldn't have been developed at all. Then it gets back to the issue that Councilman Phillips raised. So it was an approach of technology to deal with, you know, in some areas of Sussex County, a preponderance of wet sites. Yeah. Is it the perfect
again,
fix?
Kevin,
it will evolve into new technology.
We don't hand out the permits either, Kevin.
No, I know. No, I'm not.
I agree. I mean, there's some areas that shouldn't have never been.
Assessing any responsibilities to the county, but we came up with technology in response to concerns about folks being able to. With equity.
What is the annual cost to the taxpayers, to the homeowners, to everybody involved?
Around $900 every 3 years.
No, total cost of the program.
The total of the pollution control strategy itself?
$28 million.
I think it's $38 million.
$38 million.
Mm-hmm.
And that's on an annual basis times 20 years. So that's going to be $760 million. For the program for one watershed, and how many watersheds are there?
Well, see, it's actually four,
44
probably
watersheds
five watersheds out of the 44.
Size.
So,
well, I'm thrilled it's starting at Indian River. Thank you.
40
instead of up at Red Clay.
So we're talking about 44. So even if you only
I'd be cautious
30
about
don't use 44 times that number because the Inland Bays watershed actually encompasses like five or six of those 44 watersheds.
The Inland Bay watershed, one of 44, is going to cost $750 million to do this. Okay.
Well,
If you look to the progress to date, to get where we are right now, we're spending $14 million a year.
How much would it cost to get the Rehoboth Bay affluent out of the bays?
The cheapest estimate, Councilman Phillips, is for the ocean outfall is approximately $40
million. Okay, so we could spend $760 million to get some years only 15% out.
Well, that includes the $760 million includes the price of the point source elimination.
Okay. So only $40 million of that 760 is to get Rehoboth out.
Well, times the fees that folks would pay over that 20-year period, plus the state, investment in that $40 million. So all those costs are rolled into that lump sum that you just calculated.
So do you see this $750 million coming out of the general fund, out of the taxpayers' personal pockets? Where is this $750 million going to come from? For this one watershed?
It always comes from the taxpayers.
All the above.
All the above.
To the extent that the general fund is financed by you and me and other taxpayers.
Are there going to be grant programs for low-income homeowners who can't afford this program?
There's a grant and low interest loan program that we operate for low interest loans and grants to folks replacing on-site systems. I believe the county also has
one. Hey, we got a program.
We'd like to see that expanded.
Okay. So $750 million are going to come from either the government, which Mr. Kowak really points out is ultimately the taxpayer, or from individual property owners, homeowners, either directly or through subsidies. Okay.
But as I said, we're already paying $14 million a year to get to where we are today. So then I'm saying the strategy on top of that is another 38.
Now, I've seen the statistic that on Delmarva, septic systems account for 1% of the pollution. Clarify that, because I can't imagine we're going to spend these hundreds of millions of dollars to try to address 1%.
Well, that's interesting that you brought that study up. It's a study that was done by, was it USGS, for the entire Delmarva Peninsula. I asked some of our scientists to look at some numbers, and right now we think that septic systems are probably 8 to 9% of the problem.
Is how much? 89?
8 to 9.
Oh, 8 to 9. Okay.
Less than 10%. Oh. And the other 90% is coming from where?
Everything else.
Which primarily?
Non-point, primarily.
Development,
basically.
Agriculture.
Point sources, all the above. But all contributing.
Remember that chart he had up there earlier?
Okay. In closing here, so we can turn to the seminar here, you said by Friday you want all comments from this body or anybody else, is that what you said?
Yes, please.
We much appreciate that, Mr. President.
Thanks, Kevin.
Yeah, Mr. Dukes is not here today. I'm sure he might have some comments to make, and we'll see if he can get, hope he's listening and he can get the information to you. So, anyone have final questions? If not, we want to thank you for taking the time.
Thank you.
We'll have the first segment of other business or additional business before council. If anyone in the public would like to have any additional business at this time, we're gonna have we made a motion, Mr. Kramer. You'll have yours at the end. There you can come now too. We're gonna have two of them. Yes, ma'am.
I requested this. I have a constituent who. I invited today. Ms. Warrington, can you come forward, please?
We won't let this get too deep, but it's not a public hearing, so we'll just take the other business that the lady has for us. State your name and address, please.
Sheila Warrington. Address is 36400 Boxiana Road.
And let me.
Sebbyville, Delaware.
Let me say that I invited Ms. Warrington because I share her concerns over the issue at hand.
Yes, ma'am. Go ahead. Proceed.
Okay. Do I need to wait for the other two?
No.
Well, I just wanted to come forward today to address a problem that I've been having for quite some time. It's both Denrec and with the county. It all centers around the placement of a mobile home. And
Speak more into the mic.
Okay. Is that better?
You can lift it up.
Okay.
Hold the mic up a little bit.
Yeah, they move.
Just lift it straight up. There you go.
I'm going to break it.
That's fine.
Okay. It's sent around a permit that was issued by Denrec for connection to a cesspool. Denrec knew it was a cesspool. I told Board of Adjustments it was a cesspool. I told the county it was a cesspool. With this reconnect permit, a placement permit was issued for which it was a mobile home, for which was told to the Board of Adjustments was a modular home. So my concern right now is we've basically gone around circles with county wanting to blame the state wanting to blame the county. I've been 4 years arguing about this, 2 years since this mobile home's been put there. I'm getting nowhere. All I'm getting is the runaround and the circles. Mr. Phillips has very much stepped forward and tried to help me with this. Where do I go from here? We were told that now this mobile home, which is 14 years old, on a lot that's 7,800 square foot in the AR1 district, the previous mobile home had been gone for over 2 years, 1 year abandoned, 1 year removed, and I can't seem to get anyone to do anything to help me, well, except for Mr. Phillips, as far as what do we do now? It's in there. It's damaged my property. There's now a 5.5-foot mound system right to my property line, which I've heard him talk about mound systems. They're not 100% accurate. Yes, it replaced the cesspool, but it's created another problem now because we have water runoff. But no one wants to hear, and Denrick wants to hear these issues.
Okay, what is the problem? Somebody, what is the problem right today? You're living in the trailer?
It's not mine. No, it's not mine. It's beside my house.
So it's not your septic that's creating runoff?
No.
But presently where your new home is, you're living, is your septic operational? You said you had a cesspool, but...
No. The cesspool wasn't ours. It was on the lot beside ours.
Okay, beside yours.
Beside ours.
Who owns that?
GRL Enterprises.
So they corrected it with a mound system, as they were...
After 8 months of arguing about it, after the permit was issued, the placement permit, 8 years after, 8 months after the placement permit was issued, they finally got a good Denrick permit to put this mound system there.
So... They haven't. So, there's water running off their mound? Is that
yes,
what you're
the mound, our property line is here. The mound, 5.5 foot, comes right to our property line.
So, we have two operational septic systems, but the mound system causes runoff on your property.
Right. Well, the cesspool has been removed, and it was replaced with a mound system.
But so, are they permitted? Where's Lawrence? Lawrence, are they permitted in, I guess, to be placed in the setback area? Because there's a 10 foot setback, right, on both properties?
Mound.
Okay, there
so
we go.
The placement of it is, okay, so.
But my issue is the county couldn't have issued the permit without Denrick. And Denrick is doing nothing now but keeps giving them discretionary decisions to go back farther and farther. After a while, they're going to have this mobile home sitting right on top of the mound system. It's about 5 foot from it now.
Yeah, well, I'm trying to find out what do you want it to be done?
I would want someone to take responsibility, whether it be Mr. Lank with planning and zoning, whether it be Denrick.
Water that's running off onto your property.
For that and the 14-year-old mobile home that's sitting there that's also damaging our property.
Well, that's a permitted use, correct?
And a 7,800 square foot lot?
Well, if it was created.
It's not even a quarter acre.
Created prior to something or other, what? What's this? Do you have any other?
That's a long story, which I don't have in front of me.
Okay.
Okay, so the
county actually forced the people to move the previous mobile home. It had been abandoned for a year. It had got damaged during Hurricane Isabel.
So the bottom line is the storm water is running over on your property.
And there's an old mobile home next to you.
An old mobile home that it's right on Route 17. I'm sure you've seen it many times coming by there.
Yeah. Abandoned now.
It's not been lived in yet. They're setting on it. They're working on it today, setting it up again. And they keep coming closer and closer to our property line. I've got a mound system right to my property line and a dilapidated 14-year-old mobile home 10 foot from my property line. And can't anyone tell me this is not damaging our property value?
And I guess one of the issues that kind of came up in the course of this is a lot, very, very small lot that really is almost unbuildable on because of the current laws and setbacks. The county is trying to enforce our setback requirements. But because of the size of the lot, they did not comply. They had gotten a variance from Denrick, a discretionary variance from the distance between the home and the septic. And
there was no variance on that.
It was, as you say,
that was just given to them.
It was a decision made by somebody at Denrick. There was no public hearing. There was no findings of fact that the public could present. The home was then reinspected by the county, and it was still a foot or so off from its required setbacks. And despite all the concern that had been raised, apparently only recently another discretionary variance was given.
As of yesterday.
Without any public notice or public hearings about the effect of that. So, I mean, it's just ironic that, you know, this is all coming today while Denrec is here, and if anyone from Denrec can help bring clarity to this, I would welcome you. I'm not pointing fingers, I'm just saying, I've been here 8 years, and this is clearly the worst case of the right hand not knowing what the left hand is doing, and everybody passing the buck. I've had meetings with the inspectors, with planning and zoning directors, with attorneys, both at the planning and zoning and the county council and the board of adjustments levels. I've had meetings with state representatives, conversations with senators and folks at Denrec. And I have, you know, I feel Ms. Warrington's pain.
Okay, Kevin Donnelly will speak for Denrec at this time.
Well, as Councilman Phillips knows, we've responded in writing to this situation. And I didn't know you were coming here today, Mrs. Warrington.
I would have
brought the letter months ago.
I have your letter.
And never heard from the councilman as to his concerns about our response.
Did you hear from Senator or Representative Hocker? Representative Hocker is the appropriate one to be giving you direction.
Well, Councilman, I heard you describe that the right hand didn't know what the left hand was doing. All I'm saying is...
You're Kevin, right?
I am Kevin.
Here's your letter.
I responded, and I attempted to fully address this situation. This is the letter after this, Mrs. Warrington.
No, this was the only letter I'd received from you, November, that one.
That's not the letter I'm thinking of. Okay.
Oh, I've got plenty of emails.
In terms of, we awaited the issuance of the new placement permit from the county. My staff person was in close contact with the county to make sure that the new placement permit was issued. Okay? And that was to move the house or the mobile home back approximately a foot, as I recall, because apparently it was at 38.2 or 39.2 feet, and it had to be at least 40 feet back to comply with the county requirements. Upon issuance of that placement permit, we followed our regulations and the discretion that's provided for in those regulations to allow the connection to the system. Doesn't impact the system's operation. Doesn't impact the system's operation. Doesn't impact our environmental responsibility to enable that property owner to connect to a system.
But I have one question. What about the impact on the neighbors with the water runoff? That has one issue that has never been addressed. Is there any way of pushing the water back onto the property, the owner's property?
Again, I believe Mr. Cassidy, who runs my Georgetown office, has been out to the site. I can talk with him again, Mrs. Warren.
He was out there when there was a cesspool.
And we corrected the cesspool situation. Again, this is all covered in the letter that Mr. Phillips was copied on, and I believe was also sent to you.
This is the only letter I've gotten.
Okay, what we're going
to
do.
You know,
I'm more than happy
to come back
to the council
when I'm prepared, but I am not prepared to discuss this matter.
The only thing I'm asking is for someone to take responsibility, whether it be the county, the state, preferably both. But it's like a mistake was made on both sides, and we're the ones ultimately paying for it with both the loss of their value and the damage this is doing their property. And it's like I'm not asking for somebody to pull miracles out. This is something to be done.
How big is your lot where you're at?
Our lot is almost 30,000 square foot.
Okay. So 3/4 acre almost.
Almost 3/4 acre.
Okay.
See, the problem is we've got all these old lots, and if this is an old lot, they're, you know, somebody owns it. And if they deny them a permit or do something on it, then they've got it, you know, then they're in court to buy it because they've deemed it, you know, unlivable or something like that. So they get forced to come up with a system, and I guess the system they came up with, it was this mound system. And maybe the runoff impact on you wasn't thought about. So I'm sure maybe a swale or something in there that, you know, in between the properties or somehow could catch some of the water and redirect it somewhere. I don't know. How high is the mound?
About a 5.5 foot. It's every bit of the stall.
Right.
It's huge.
Right.
I mean the lot's only 46 foot wide.
Is the water just from that one slope that's aiming towards your property? Is that all the water you're getting, or is it coming from
the lot,
front yard?
Lot is 46 foot wide, and I believe the side on us is around 150 foot long. Mm-hmm. And this mound system takes up the whole rear of the property.
Yeah, I'm sure of it. But nobody wants to go back and make those lots unbuildable. That's the trouble.
But the trouble is, the previous mobile home,
right,
there's a, what they call the discontinuance, which Mr. Lawrence doesn't want to hear about.
But once it's a recorded lot, if it was a duly recorded lot, you're stuck, aren't you, Lawrence, pretty much?
As a buildable lot, but not one to place a mobile home, and not one to place a 14-year-old mobile home.
Well, they would have still, even if it was not a mobile home, wouldn't they still have had to have a mound system?
They would have had to have something there.
Right, I mean, the mound system.
And cause unless Central comes through, which I don't.
I mean,
that.
Yeah, the connection between the mound system and the mobile home, it would be any type of home.
Right.
Right? If I'm not mistaken, isn't that true? Is that right, Kevin? I mean, anything would need a new
assuming mound. The house was of the same dimension and right, number okay. of bedrooms as the mobile home, yeah, it'd be approximately the same size.
But the bottom line is the mound system's creating a runoff.
And that's, it's created
that's
a lot of runoff.
To be addressed.
And you can see on the sides of the mound system where water has run off of it and actually created craters right into the side of it. Or water is washed down it.
I think we're not probably going to.
And get water goes downhill.
Okay. We all know the concerns and the issues.
My commitment. We'll go back and look at the,
yeah.
The.
So and Mr.
The mound system
will keep us surprised.
Okay.
Maybe
okay.
some way just to catch the water.
Appreciate you coming in.
Spread it back to the other.
Well, one other thing I'd like to clarify before Mr. Donnelly leaves was that with him offering the. With him giving the another 1 foot. Discretionary decision is actually facilitating a non-conforming use of that lot, which falls right back onto the county.
What's the non-conforming use?
A mobile home on a 7,800 square foot lot. I've got
okay,
the layout
okay,
of the
I
lot.
See. Okay, I know. It should have been a modular or a stick built.
It's exactly what was told to the Board of Adjustments. It was a modular. I have it on tape.
Okay.
I mean, you can listen to the. Board of Adjustments hearings.
Well, so
it was a module.
Is it on a permanent foundation, Lawrence? Are you aware?
Going to be.
See, that's what there's a trick they can use. They can put it on a found, take a mobile home, put it on a foundation, change the title to.
Oh yeah,
other.
It's just type C or
sleight
class
of hand
C or
trick.
Something.
Class C, but it's done strictly for a mortgage.
It's a sleight of hand trick that we've still permitted
right.
in the county.
It's not
right.
a hand trick. It's funny. It's an allowed to get a mortgage versus a.
Whatever. It takes a mobile home and makes it something that it's
okay.
makes it not.
Mrs. Morgan, the council was kind enough to allow this to
okay.
kind of be put in the middle of our agenda.
Yeah.
Kevin Donnelly was kind enough to stay around. And
he said
and
he has committed that he will get some answers here.
Do I have that same commitment from the county?
We'll get you the answer.
We can do. Mr.
Can
Phillips will follow up, I'm sure.
He will be on it with Mr. Lang.
He'll stay on top of it.
Thank you.
I get a call about every other day.
All right, well, thank you.
And Ms. Warrington, we have additional business available to everyone at the end of each council meeting. Dan Kramer takes advantage of it every week. You're welcome to come back and keep us apprised.
Okay, now, Mr. Baker, let's move on to
this
Sussex Conservation District grant request.
Okay, we have with us today Mr. Vanderwin, who's chairman of the Sussex Conservation District, and maybe he'd like to come up and bring his. Debbie with him. And what we have is a grant request from the Conservation District. The county budgets $75,000 a year, as we're required by the state code to do for assistance with the drainage programs for the Conservation District. This will be the third year that the state has approved in the bond bill a matching $100,000. If the county budget's $100,000, then the state will match that with an additional $100,000. So the last 2 years, we have gone ahead and taken money from contingencies to match the state's contribution. And that's what we're suggesting here today, is that we do have sufficient funds in the contingency account to do this. And if you concur, then what we are recommending that the that we match the state's grant for $100,000. And I don't know if Debbie or Mr. Vanderman would like to address it.
We certainly thank you, Mr. Baker. The money has been used to good use for the maintenance of most of our tax ditches around the county, especially after we have the floods like we had in late June and again later on in August or whenever it was. We have more requests for tax ditch repair more than anything else than we can do it all at one time. So, but this money is of great value, not only to the people that is directly involved, but also Sussex County, per se, on a whole. And we certainly appreciate your generosity. But before we receive this, I've got a little tribute I'd like to read here. And
that's fine.
I think he's coming back in.
There you go.
Now he's back in here.
Pay attention.
Are you listening?
I have a little tribute I'd like to read on behalf of Mr. Stickles. This tribute is addressed to Robert Stickles. It says, "Dear Bob, on behalf of the Sussex Conservation District Board of Supervisors, I want to congratulate you on your upcoming retirement. You have been a pleasure to work with over the years, and your support of the district programs is unprecedented. I understand that things don't happen without the approval of the County Council, but it was with your direction and influence that the Council supported the district's goals and objectives in creating a better environment and quality of life for the citizens of Sussex County. Again, congratulations. We have certainly enjoyed working with you and wish you a long and prosperous retirement."
Thank you.
I didn't vote for that, Bob. I was principal of the day many years ago, Woodbridge Elementary School. Your grandson was in the class, and I went in, and it was the day after one of these days where we had presented a check, and I told him that I presented a check to his grandfather, and it put the county, since I had been here, over $1 million that we had given you. And he said, "From that day on, I was the most popular kid with the girls in that class for the rest of the year." He said, "Then I had to explain to him that it went to the soil conservation and not to the Vanderwinds." Thank you.
Yeah, I do have a motion. Be it moved that the Sussex County Council approve a $100,000 matching grant to the Sussex Conservation District for tax ditch related projects, which is in addition to the $75,000 grant included in the fiscal 2007 budget.
So moved, Mr. President.
Second.
Motion by Mr. Jennings, second by Mr. Phillips, to appropriate a matching grant of $100,000 to the Sussex Conservation District. Questions? Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Jones?
Yes.
Mr. Dukes? I bet it's yes. I forgot he went to check.
There you go.
Here comes the money. We're passing that money down at the table there.
We'll let Mr. Jones.